Today, it's Edwin's Monday Evening Property Rant. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Well, notice post covering finance and property news. It's Monday evening again, and Edwin's back for yes, another rant. Hi, Edwin. How are you?
Well, I'm pretty pissed off, Martin. I'm really pissed off. I went and bought some gyprock materials and plasterboard and that for the boys for one of the projects that we're helping one of our clients to do the renovation, and I got stunned 3.5% extra on the invoice. And I said, hold on a minute. I mean, that equates to over $17, right, for the overall invoice. And I said, hold on a minute. Fuel's gone back from $3.19. Diesel's gone back from $3.19 to $2.77. I could have got it this morning for. Why the rise? And says, oh, well, it is what it is. So fuel's going backwards and the prices are continuing to rise, Martin. Figure that one out.
Well, we're going to see a lot more of that. So anybody who thinks that this crisis is anything other than in the very early foothills hasn't been paying attention over the recent times. I made a show yesterday and I highlighted there that some of the building and construction firms were talking about very significant price increases continuing to trickle through for all sorts of reasons. You know, energy powers everything. And the inflationary impulse is pretty strong. So, yeah, I'm afraid that we're going to see a lot more of this. And, of course, who ends up paying? Well, it's ultimately the poor old end consumer, isn't it? They're the ones at the end of the chain, as it were. And so wherever those price increases come from, whether it's from the government or whether it's from international pressures or oil pressures, we end up paying.
Yes, this is why I keep on saying, and happy you and I have been talking about it since the lockdowns from early 2020. And we said that once these prices start climbing, they'll only go higher and higher. They won't pull back. And once the vultures, once the piranha and the shark smell blood, they're not gonna take us back to where we were pre lockdowns of 2020. And it just seems to any global event now, any hiccup around the world is creating a major storm, a major shakeup here. But it's because they can, Martin. My take, and this is just my personal take on this whole thing, is that they're trying to really push to some sort of institutionalize, you could call it, or unionize the whole building sector, including the small players. You've got to get rid of the small players, the small independents, in order for the big boys to have most of the pie and eat it as well. And this is why I've also called on I've also put out an article there on LinkedIn, and I shared it with our followers and our viewers as well. And that is that the industry itself is gravitating more towards the larger brands running the whole show, and the independents basically being phased out. So I can see that more and more in the building sector. But what that means is that construction is just going to cost more and more. And because even as we know it, with our insiders in the building game and organisations, HIA and the like, Bob the Builder and so forth. I mean, there's above 50% of main building companies are trading insolvent, and there'll be close to 57 to 60% small operators will go bust before the end of this year because of the recent global events.
Yeah, absolutely. And the economic crisis, I made a show on this, is an economic crisis incoming? Well, I think it's very true that there is a crisis, and we're only in the foothills of it. But just to give you a couple of takes on it, so the Iran crisis raises the stakes for the RBA, and the treasurer of this article suggests that Australia's economic outlook is darkening as hostilities in the Middle East drag on, and that raises the stakes for Chalmers' fifth budget, which of course is due in May, and the RBA is expected to lift interest rates again, possibly, although possibly not. And if you just sort of stand back and think about it, we've got the issue that the stock market is disconnected very much from what's going on in the Middle East, which is crazy. A lot of insider trading continuing as well, by the way. And experts have warned that The damaged infrastructure and disrupted supply chains could lead to severe economic consequences. Of course, Bloomberg said the cumulative global impact of 7 weeks of war in the Middle East will begin to emerge in the coming week. So it's literally facing ahead of us. Oh, and by the way, we also had a Ukrainian attack on oil as well in Russia. And the IMF has warned that Australia is set for highest inflation rates in the developed world. And the Financial Review has said a re-escalation of conflict in the Middle East has oil markets on edge and could augur more pain at the Bowser, well, and beyond. Oh, and by the way, just for you, here's a little bit of comparative data. Australia diesel price is up 52.1%, compared with the UK up 18%, Russia up 0.5%. So, you know, even China up 25%. So Australia is way up there following Malaysia, Nigeria and the Philippines. So it is a bit of a significant issue. Oh, and if you want to sort of get a bit of a take here, Netherlands is to activate the first phase of its energy crisis plan, according to reports from Reuters. So, yeah, we are in a very significant position. But as you say, it always comes back to the same levers being pulled. And somehow the building and construction companies, particularly the large ones, will find a way of passing it all on. The smaller companies will continue to grind down. In my surveys, I see more building firms up against it, particularly small ones. The reports are that the ATO is having significantly delayed payments of tax owing and GST and those sorts of things owing. And so, yeah, we are in a very difficult situation. But there is no simple way out of this. And I do feel that there's a little bit of complacency sitting, you know, in and around the place. But this has the makings of a very severe downturn, which is why I sort of, when I made my earlier show, I posted it yesterday. I said, oh no, property prices are falling. And I said, hold my beer, right? Property prices are falling. Although actually, you know, be careful. I made a show with Tarek Brooker called His Housing Toast. And we went through there some of the reasons why house prices rose. It's all government intervention. And despite what the AFR said, that house prices in Melbourne and Sydney are going backwards. Actually, they're not going backwards elsewhere at the moment, according to Catality data. Christopher Joy put an article out saying interest rate rises will cause a fall in property prices. And Chalmers is expected to tweak the CGT to bring it back to a previous mechanism, which effectively is adjusting for real value jumps rather than actually the 50%, and also potentially possibly reducing the impact of negative gearing as well. So, yeah, it's very significant, very interesting. But again, in the real world, you've got ordinary people struggling to try and actually make ends meet, struggling also to try and work out whether there is still an opportunity to buy property. And not all property is going up, not all property is going down. So again, as we always say at this point in the show, you have to go granular.
100%, man. But look, well, one thing's for sure is that haircuts are going to get more expensive, and you and I are going to have to. Well, you've already transitioned to your own home shaving device, and I'm still trying to get used to my one. Look, I was basically getting some chicken food this week. I ran out of scratch mix for the for the chickens. But it may be if prices keep on going up, I might be eating the chickens the following week around. So who knows? But yeah, look, and it's all due to oil prices. I mean, there's all sorts of look. I think part of it, you could say, okay, fair enough. Yeah, the prices are going up because of X and Y reason, but there's a lot of other bullshit that's out there that's pushing things both ways, and this is what we're going to be sifting through and working through tonight's rant in a little bit more detail, because we've got to take stock of all the indicators, and then people can make their own assessment when they're making the property decision, whether to buy, whether to sell, or whether to rent. As I say, it's going to have an effect, short term, medium term, and long term. So you got to take stock of all the information points. So look, we can start with the simple fact that the The push for the 1.2 million properties by the government, it's only got us so far. It's only got us to 527,000 over 2 years, and we're supposed to be hitting. So yeah, we're supposed to be hitting 1.2 million, but other people are saying that we're closer to 100,000 in the shortfall. But in light of that, the population growth has been astronomical at the same time. So, Seven and the news over the weekend, and also on today, a lot of it's focused on the issues of if we're going to stop investors from investing, and if we're going to be putting stopples on investors from investing moving forward to kickstart that the momentum of construction, well. If we're going to stop them, the government isn't really doing anything. So we're between the people that want to go into a house are between a rock and a hard place. And there was a lot of articles over the weekend that showed this. But the reason why I wanted to put this up on the rant tonight, the 7 News Brisbane article that talks about housing crisis deepens as government falls behind on target. I mean, and they're stupidly behind on targets is because I liked the image on the left-hand side of the auctioneer that's walking there in front of the house. If you notice there, the image there is a subdivision of homes. They look like they're sitting probably on 280, 300 square meters at best. And look at how close they are. Look at how close the edges of the roofs are. To the fence line. If you were a little bit overweight, Martin, you wouldn't be able to walk down the side of your house. So this is what we're building, and this is what people are sort of aspiring for, or are they really? And this is, and for me, this is a visual indicator of what I've been saying for a lot of years now, and the WeChat chatterers, and following the WeChat chatterers as well. Is there is certain types of property, certain classes of property. Across many markets, many markets around Australia, many city markets around Australia, except Melbourne, that are going to be very desirable. The chatterers told us that. They've been talking about it, at no length in the chatter that Dusty and Evan are following, and it rings more true now after seeing those images, after seeing the commentary over the weekend, and the shortfalls left, right, and centre in. The greater the impact obstacles and hurdles that the building industry has to go through now in order to build something substantial. So the push is for high rise. The people don't want high rise. The desired properties become your established homes on decent blocks of land in established areas, in areas that have got the schools, that have got the religious institutions, that have got the medical facilities, established areas, that's got your infrastructure. And this is the space that it's going to be very hard and very difficult to fall in price, regardless of what a lot of the commentary is floating around, in my opinion, and especially in Sydney. But when you start digging deeper into the commentary, Martin, you start seeing that the so-called falls are 0.02%. I mean, like I said, we've had some last time around. We had something like 15-20% in not only in one market, but in multiple markets across Sydney last year because of the stimulus. Well, yeah, what does a fall of 0.002 or 0.04% mean across the grand scheme of things? So this is where. You also mentioned the podcast that you did with Tarek, and I was listening to that podcast as well, and I thought that was interesting. One of the slides that he showed there in his reasoning as to why properties weren't going backwards, but rather we're keeping up in value, and I dare say this is again nothing different to what you and I have been saying and talking about. You've got the where you're where the carriers, most of these investment mortgages, are your WeChat chatterers, and to an extent your silent tigers as well, Because and the appetite, when you start looking and drilling into the types of properties, and you start looking and drilling into what's being available, and even Tarek said in the video, in you know itself, in the podcast that you did with Tarek, even he said himself that how they've investors have gravitated strongly towards the freestanding homes, which is what you and I've been talking for years on end, for many years prior, and this is where we are. And this is why people have got to really be very careful as to sourcing all the information and all the data points in order to make a more of a reasonable decision moving forward.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's very, very interesting. I've completed my work now on a suburb called Austral, which is towards Liverpool. And there you've got thousands and thousands and thousands of subdivisions going on with, 280 to 300 squares, costing you now 700,000 plus to buy one of those. And when you actually look into it, you can see the supply rising. You can see the compression going on, more and more smaller plots. And you can see people, I think, being fooled a bit by the so-called plans to develop the whole area over the, a generation or something. But the truth is that actually it is the long-established properties on larger plots that are actually the ones that will hold their value and probably will continue to go up. And I'm seeing that at the moment in my analysis as well. And as you say, if you look at the recent listings, some types of property are becoming more available, but other types of property, like standalone large properties, there aren't that many of them. And if you look at the demand for those, they're still very strong. And if you look at the areas, it's not all areas too. So again, it comes back to this same old, that you really do have to look quite closely at particular areas and understand the dynamics within particular suburbs and particular types of property. And I'm fascinated by that thought juxtaposed with the, oh, there's an 18-year cycle which religiously comes in, right? Which is actually what this article from Catherine Cashmore refers to. And, she's talking about a well-known theory that there is actually a long cyclical upturn and downturn for property, and we are due for a downturn over the next 12 to 18 months. So I don't know whether that is or isn't a relevant observation, but to me, it's understanding the demand for each type of property in a particular area, who is willing to pay, who's able to pay, what are they wanting to buy? They're not wanting to buy high rise. They're not wanting to buy new subdivisions, but if you've got an older style property on a larger block, they are where the long-term values are going to be. And I doubt whether they're going to have the same 18-year cycle impact that maybe other areas will.
Look, this is fascinating. Look, just to strengthen our point in relation to we were talking about the types of properties. If you look at the 2023 figures there, Martin, you look at the land envelopes for sale in 2023, same week in 2023, there was under 1,000 land envelopes for sale. And now, because of the subdivisions in Austral, as you said, because there's been a lot of you and I have been talking about Austral subdivisions and all around Badgerys Creek Airport and all those areas there, you've got a lot of land coming up. Now we've got in the current figures that we tally that we'll talk about later on, you've got over 3,500 land envelopes now for sale. So this is where I say to people, like you've got to be careful when you start looking at the mainstream news and as to what's coming on market and what this deluge of properties. That let's not forget that 2 years ago, our mate Tom Panos and his mate Mark Boris, they were telling everybody to sell, sell, sell because it was the end of the world. It was the end of the world, and interest rates were going to go to 16%, but maybe even 18, 19%. I exaggerate a little bit there. And they needed to sell because there was going to be a deluge of new listings on market, and we never got it. You and I kept on saying, rebutting those calls. Where are they going to go? Well, what is the appetite? Where are they? Show me the listings. Show me the real listings, not the bullshit stories that you hear on mainstream media on on Domain or AFR or anywhere else. But show me the numbers, because we look at the numbers on a daily basis with our clients across Sydney, right? So, and when I was just doing this quick search through our rents, our notes for our rents from the last 3 years, they're the numbers, Martin. And if you look very closely at freestanding homes, there's only 1,500 to 2,000. We're only 1,500 to 2,000 apart across those years. When you start thinking of an international city such as Sydney, in how it's growing in population and the appetite for investors in a city such as Sydney, 8,000, 9,000, 10,000, which is where we currently are, is a drop in the ocean in comparison to many other markets, many other global city markets. It's nothing. There's let's say 630, 635 suburbs. That's only an extra three listings per suburb across the Sydney region. This is the Sydney region. Now we're talking about the Sydney region, right? We're talking about the Domain Sydney region. So this is where people have got to really take stock and try to understand the landscape as we try to put out on our rents, because right now is a great opportunity. As I was talking to one of our clients today in Bella Vista, I was saying, look, right now is a great opportunity to buy. And I sort of hit him with a bit of a shock, and said, why is that? But everyone's saying the market's going down. I said, that's great. And that's what you got to play. That's what we got to play with. And this is that. That's how we're going to go to the vendors, vendors agents. We're gonna tell them the story that the mainstream media are telling. We're gonna be pitching that story. We're gonna be voicing. We're gonna be amplifying that tenfold when we go there and make our offers. And we're gonna put pressure on the vendor through the agent, because at the end of the day, the selling agent is not interested in carrying a listing for 4 weeks, 6 weeks, 7 weeks, 8 weeks, 9 weeks, 10 weeks, which is your normal campaign. They want to sell the property within 3 weeks. So this is one of our, you could say, strategies. You could say, because there's a lot of confusion out there, and this is what we said before: be very careful. If you're going to be selling a property, if you're a follower of the show, be very careful. Choose your selling agent wisely. Choose your marketing strategy wisely, because you don't want to fall under the pressure that the selling agents are going to not necessarily put buyers under to pay more. They're going to put more pressure on you to sell below that so that they can move on to the next gig. That's the key. That's the key takeaway. For today's rent, and last week's rent, is that be careful of the strategy. And if you're not sure, reach out and get your discount through the DFA discount promo code.
Well, yes, and it is really, really important, because with the public view changing on property and, prices are falling, et cetera, right? The agents then come back and try and apply a lot of pressure to the prospective seller to say, look, prices are down, you need to compromise, et cetera, et cetera. Now, that's good for those who actually are able to buy. And so, depending on where you are on that journey, or whether you're trying to buy or whether you're trying to sell, every cloud has a silver lining, right? There are opportunities. But again, you need to actually understand the dynamics down at the ground level. You can't talk about averages. And, as you say, 0.2% or whatever it was, 0.4%, whatever it was, that meaningless, completely meaningless in terms of movements. You've got to actually understand the dynamics on the ground and understand the local situation. And it is fascinating. I've had a couple of conversations with prospective purchasers over the last couple of days where they were looking at areas where prices have dropped. And the question is now forming in their own mind: well, prices have dropped, so should I wait on the assumption that prices will drop further, or should I actually dive in on the principle that I'm paying less than I thought it was? Now, I don't give specific advice, but what I said was, if you're buying a property to live in and it ticks all the boxes in terms of location and features, and you're going to stay there for a consistently longish period of time, you know, 5 years or more, then actually, if it's come down a bit and it's the right property for you, it may well be worth considering. Don't sit on the sidelines assuming that everything's going to crash, because it may not, particularly as this one was, a standalone property with quite a large block in a nice location with, you know, nicely finished. So it was actually quite an attractive property. And so, again, it comes back to being sensible, looking at the individual property rather than taking these high level stories about 18 year cycles, everything's going to crash, or the AFR saying, oh, Sydney and Melbourne are going down. Melbourne probably will go down, by the way. But yeah, it really is important to think about it on a property by property, transaction by transaction basis.
Yeah, look, I admire Catherine, and I think she's a very, very intelligent woman, very, very capable as a buyer's agent, and a bit knowledgeable in her own right. I don't understand this 18-year cycle business, and I've never really studied it or gone in depth with it. I've heard people talk about it. I had a conversation with Catherine briefly about it, but for me, as I said, for me, a lot of the turning point in a lot of my thinking was in the lockdowns from 2020, because from then it was good in a way for me, because I didn't have to go and study historical events, because they don't know that, in my view, this is like in my own personal view. It doesn't mean rats right now based on what's going on, because our governments are not in control as far as I'm concerned, and that's my personal opinion. That's my personal view, and therefore we need to take things. Politicians lie, news articles lie, the people lie in general, but numbers don't lie. So we just go back to the basic numbers and principle, and we just. I break down whenever looking at transacting or helping our clients transact. The last cab off the rank for me is to break down the numbers. Yeah, okay, we believe we got it at a great price. Now let's look at what it's going to cost to get it to the way you want it to go to, and then determine whether or not it's still a good proposition. It is still a good offer, because right now. That dynamic, that new bit of information as to material prices going up by 30% and labor costs going up by 20% across the board, and delays and not enough people in the construction workforce, it is just going to increase and lift the values. Now, you may have got a great price in terms of negotiating a price on the purchase, but hastily you didn't consider the cost of the renovation, and what you thought was going to be $100,000 renovation ends up being a $200,000 renovation or further issues. So we don't just stop there. You just got to keep on going. And as you said earlier on, Martin, as you say to your client, you got to crunch those numbers, because you got to bring in all aspects. It's no longer like I said before, and that is, the decisions you could say flippantly, 20 years ago, 25 years ago, oh shit, I blew this one. When you're buying a property out in Mount Druitt for $210,000 in investment property, but if you sit on it long enough, now it's worth $1 million, so you don't really worry about it. But now the entry point, even in those houses, in your Australs, in your in your Marsden Parks, in your Badgerys Creeks, in all these areas, the entry point for those new builds, you're looking upwards of $1.5, $1.6, $1.7 million. And so you can't afford to make those mistakes and not be careful with what you've got going in, because the money is made and lost on the purchase, not on the sale.
That's a very, very important point to underscore. It's when you get into the market and where you get in and what you get into, which is the critical bit. Unfortunately, quite often people spend less time thinking about that than they do when they go and buy a new fridge. It's crazy.
Exactly.
It's crazy, but true. And that's really, 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 really important. And I do think that particularly now with all the uncertainties, you know, it becomes ever more important. Not all property is going to go up from this point. Some property may fall, but not all property is going to behave the same. And the other angle, I suppose, just to sort of overlay this, we should just talk briefly about Cornell, right? So there was a whole bunch of announcements this week relating specifically to a new development proposed for Cornell, that rather sleepy coastal village, which is, quote, going to be transformed into the Gold Coast of the South, according to the New South Wales government. 12,000 homes to be constructed, as described as coastal density, and they're talking about not much improvement in terms of transport, other than maybe a few electric Uber drivers and maybe some Lime scooters or something. This doesn't sound particularly wonderful. Apartments will start from $3.8 million, and a three-bedroom residence from $8.1 million. This plan has moved the entire remaining... Okay. And dates. Construction's expected to begin in, wait for it, 2037, pending environmental approvals, etc., etc. So, don't know what you make of that, but to my mind, my first thought, Edwin, was simply, migration, migration, migration.
100%. 100%. But the interesting thing is the migration that's going to come in the future is not going to be like the Wee Chai Chatterers. They had a huge appetite for your high-rise developments because that's what they were used to, and they thought that we were able to build better than what their builders were building them in the main cities of mainland China. The new migrants, they don't want high-rise, and they're going to invest in high-rise. But when you start talking about a $3.8 million affordable, from affordable $3.8 million apartment there, I mean, that's... you got to have rocks in your head, and I dare say the contamination there would be so intense that the millions of cubic meters of contaminated soil into the middle of Australia and bury it there somewhere. And hence the construction costs. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. It is not going to happen. They keep on pushing the high rise. They're making it easier for developers, which you and I break the story. That's what the developers are waiting for the governments to put their hands in their pockets in order for them to start building and guarantees. And this is what Minns is giving the developers now. He's given them guarantees. The government is going to guarantee to the bank. Because the developer can't start a project until they get X amount of sales and X amount of funds in the held in trust. Well, in a lot of these developments, as we spoke before, the government is actually going to guarantee, and they've already put the hand up to guarantee certain projects around Sydney, which is farcical, really, because it's the taxpayer that's going to guarantee it. And when they do their ask, guess who's going to be paying? Guess who's going to be footing the bill? Not Minns, not the politicians, not the councillors or the local town planners or the people in government departments, the think tanks and everybody else. We are the small business operators are going to be footing the bill to pay for this shit, but. That's what they told us. That's what the developers said. We're not going to move forward. And this is why the developers have got the governments, under the barrel, and they've got no choice. So, but the irony of all this is that the government thinks that the that the Hail Mary is going to be bringing in Southeast Asian migrants, and that they're going to move into this, buy these new dwellings, buy these developments in droves. But they're not. We're already, myself and my team, we've got our own think tank that doesn't cost us millions of dollars, of course. We've got, and we're mapping out to where the wave of expats coming back home, where it's going to be desirable for them. And I'll give our followers and our viewers a hint as to where it's going to be. Yes, a lot of it's going to be in the going to be looking for property in your, in your beachfronts, your eastern suburbs, your Gold Coast and that. But the majority, we strongly believe they're going to be going elsewhere. And land is key. Land, think, just think land. And you can think where the next growth is going to be, and it's not going to be too far away from the major commercial hubs, Martin. And this is, and you don't need to go too far from the commercial hubs to be in a nice block of land where you can absorb nature, you can feel somewhat at peace. You drive into the city. I'm always commuting into the city, obviously, driving around from Darling Point to Bella Vista to Liverpool, all over the place with our clients and looking at houses, homes, and the projects that we're managing for our clients. And I'm always driving around, and it is getting absolutely torturous driving on the roads. Somebody should tell these people that there's a bloody fuel issue, but there seems to be more cars on the road, more trucks on the road, and everybody's just about everybody's jumping around with a short fuse in their cars, ready to ram raid anybody that comes in their way.
Yes, well, my experience of driving around the major areas of Sydney in recent years was that it got slower and slower and slower. I remember I went and did a very big seminar on one of the coastal beaches just south of Sydney, and then I had to come back in and go from there round past the airport and down south back to the Illawarra. And it took me 2 hours to get from the coastal place just to the airport. It was stop, start, stop, start. And it was just like, where's all this traffic come from? Where is it all going? I don't understand where it's. And then I thought, well, of course, it's all about migration, isn't it? Because, of course, the population growth is huge. And just tying the ribbons on that, the housing crisis deepens as population growth outpaces new housing supply. This is realestate.com.au. The migration numbers are still very strong and will continue to be. And it's interesting, of course, that there has been some talk now that maybe the conservative side of politics is going to dial back migration in some way, although it's not clear exactly how they're going to do it. But Chalmers recently underscored the importance of strong migration to support the economy. And given the fact that that's one of the few levers they've got, because as you said, a lot of the issues are now external to Australia. We're at the end of all of those issues with the disruption in the Middle East and the oil crisis. But actually, dialing migration up could be a bit of an antidote, potentially, to some of the worst economic impacts, because if you get more people, they can pay more tax, of course. But where are you going to put them? How are they going to get around? And what is it going to do to the housing, which of course is still undersupplied relative to demand? So yeah, migration is the only silver bullet they've got. How good it will be? Interesting question.
Yeah, because this is something that the Richard Chatterers have been talking about, and this is what's not being discussed in the mainstream at the moment. And again, this is breaking news. So there's currently the WeChat Chatterers in mainland China, the groups there. The big talk is that how difficult it is to want to come to Australia. This is the Asian students come to Australia, and when you do hit Australia, obviously the rents are astronomical for them, and they have to room with a lot of others, which a lot they don't they go with it, but it's not that the first choice. And also the daily living is very costly, so we're losing a lot of it's almost becoming cheaper for them to refocus on going to America. or to England, right? Whereas it was a lot more expensive to go to America and a lot more expensive to go to England, your neck of the woods now, to study. And third choice was, Australia. Then obviously, so our first choice was Australia because it was a lot more expensive to go to America and to England. Now it's reversing. And this is why even UTS have got major issues presently with the intake because, and they're having to cut down. And this is maybe a bit off, but my understanding is that the universities are trying to put a unified front to present degrees via online learning, distant learning, and actually give them degrees overseas, but in order to still charge a fee. You can imagine how well that's going to go, right? So because they're starting to lose a lot of that traffic coming from the Asian regions because it's just astronomically too high for them. They can't. Commuting's cost them a lot. Rents are through the roof. They don't have enough housing. We're not providing enough housing, and the list goes on. So the changeover is going to be, as they're talking, is going to be through the southeast region. Your Indian community, your Silent Tigers, your Pakistani, your more from that region. But there's a bit of a twist now, Martin, and this is where I love listening to the wechat chatterers, and because they're even ahead of the bloody government with the way that with what they're saying, what they're thinking. This is something that's going to be going to perhaps put a bit of light at the end of the tunnel to those who want to get into the property market, because again, the wechat chatterers and Wall Street, nobody's I don't they haven't come across anything here in Australia as yet, are talking about the new era, the new era of India's grand industrialization. So yes, on the one hand, we're losing our mining sector is losing orders from China because China's in a downward trend. The real property trend's going backwards. They're not buying a lot of iron ore to obviously for the production of steel and everything else because of the infrastructure spend is also down. But nobody's talking other than the wechat chatterers and Wall Street to an extent, talking about how the new emerging market that they themselves are seeing that Australia is going to be going to have a high demand on Australian minerals, which is India, because they're about to overtake China in manufacturing. Manufacturing is going to go ballistic in India, according to the chatter. The real property developments are going to go hell for leather as well. Then you've got infrastructure is just going to be phenomenal in India. Now, depending on how quickly that takes effect, will determine whether or not people still want to come to Australia or want to stay in India. Because you also got to look at the social economic trends there as well. You got to look at the society, the different classes they have in society. Why come to Australia, to work as a laborer or to work as as an Uber driver or a delivery driver, whatever, when you can stay there and make better income, and because of the cloud the different classes in society, you can still have a better lifestyle, right? You still got your subordinates there, that you still got your housemaids, you still got your chauffeur, whatever, because it's very much affordable because of the way that the society operates. So this is the quandary that we're we could be facing, we could be going into, that could be a lifeline for home prices, because if then as much as Australia is going to be opening up the doors and say, come and come. The question is are they going to want to come, right? Initially, are they going to really want to come? And for what reasons will they come, especially if India is really going to be exploding the way that they believe it's going to be exploding? Then you've got your, as you raised the point last week in the conversation, is the point with regards to a lot of the majority of the developments in UAE and Dubai were built by Indian Indian companies and Indian construction workers and the like. Now, initially, we're saying that the refocus of the expats and everybody else were potentially going to be for Australia for other reasons, that, for safety reasons, other than for for wealth in that sense. But if things start taking shape in India the way that the WeChat charters are talking about, we could even miss out on that. Then we go back to who is going to build all these other so-called projects. Remember, there's one in Darling Harbour, or next to the Anzac Bridge. There's a new suburb that's going to be built there. There's another new suburb that's going to be built in, in here and there and everywhere. They're building new suburbs. They're building new suburbs on the in the mines. They're building all these new suburbs. But who's really going to build? Are we going to even have anybody to build, Mark? That is the $64 billion question moving forward, which is an interesting time to be alive in when you start thinking and analyzing the dynamics and which way things are going to go with property.
Yes, and it's interesting that I've noticed the CEO of BHP and a few other CEOs have been talking about the opportunity directly in India, right? So it is a fascinating dynamic. And if in fact we do get the Indian revolution coming through and effectively a lot of activity, economic activity in India, which sucks up a lot of workers, well, that could potentially mean that we don't get those people coming to Australia to build in Australia. We might also even find that migration is weaker and the shock of the recession therefore might be a bit different from what people are thinking. This is such a fascinating issue. But I hardly see any discussion at all of this specific issue in the mainstream media. So, once again, we're ahead of the curve, I think, Edwin, thanks to the WeChatters.
Yeah, and this is, but this is why I say we are ahead of the curve. We are breaking news. I mean, when you talk about the CEO of Vale or Vale, depending on which whether you use the Latin pronunciation or the English pronunciation, the CEO, the mining company in Brazil, South America, and the CEO of BHP talking about this, but yet nobody's talking about it here in Australia. Why? It potentially. Potentially, it could be the Hail Mary that the government is looking for in terms of, making sure that we don't go into a, we don't get hit with a bad recession, because we could be pouring out iron ore, we could be selling to India, and we could have two major clients, although China, is tapering down, but India's, moving up. So, but nobody wants to talk about that. They all just want to just want to talk about superficial stuff and emotional stuff and auction clearance rates.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, if you're assuming you can get bunker fuel, you can do exports to India. It's probably a little closer actually. So we'll see. Edwin, very interesting. Let's move on to just before we finish off, just look at the numbers because the numbers are continuing to tell us something quite important as well. This is the data for the Sydney region on the 13th, 23,863 properties listed. If you go forward a week, 24,298. So another bit of a rise of listings. And in fact, if you look at the trends, you can see here that, yep, the trends are up. But again, as you said earlier on, land. Got to look at land.
Yeah, land. Look, there are 2,000 more freestanding homes on market than going back to 2023, even 2024. Another interesting point there is the townhouses, which is your they've seemed to really come up. There's something like 1,200 or 1,300 more townhouses in on the market for sale. Today. than 3 years ago. I haven't really looked into as to why, but that's a significant jump. I tend to think not a lot of development. The medium, the small to medium size strata lots, blocks, which is your townhouse, villa, have been built in recent years. That could be a thing. And the ones that have been built, they've also coming up to the use by date, as I call it, because a lot of the properties that we've visited and we've inspected for clients, in the likes of townhouses and villas that have been built around Enmore, Stanmore, those areas, in the Canterbury area, they were built in the early 80s, and you could see that there's a lot of wear and tear. But it's interesting. Overall, the numbers are still relatively low, and as we go further into winter, we'll see whether how it continues to trend, and what people decide to do, whether to stay on or pull up stumps.
Yeah, I've had a couple of conversations recently with people who were skating on the edge and trying to work out whether they could survive or not, and were thinking, well, maybe we can. They've now changed their mind and thinking, well, maybe we should get out while we can before property prices slide further. These tend to be in properties like high rise or, as you say, townhouses, where in fact it's probably not as an attractive property as it might be. So it's interesting that some people are thinking, well, maybe this is a bit of a nudge to actually take action rather than actually withdraw. So we'll see how that plays out. Let's look at Melbourne briefly. So on the 13th, we had 31,335 properties listed. A week later, 32,178. So the numbers still go up. And it is just worth highlighting that the houses comprise more than 21,400. So there's a lot of property which is still going on in Melbourne, as we might expect, knowing what we know about Melbourne and what's not happening there. And in Brisbane, 3,224 on the 13th, 3,363 a week later. So a slight rise. And the auction data continues to bemuse a number of people, with the listings, well, relatively weak, and the clearances, well, relatively low. So yeah, I don't know what you think about this, Edwin, but to my mind, people are still walking away from auctions.
Yeah, they are. The sentiment's not there. The gist of it is gonna wind down, and it's a strategy that's had, in my opinion, it's had its use by date. And unless it's, I've always said, unless it's a unique property, it's an order from the court. Unless it's got something unique about it, you can't really put a value on it. It's a settlement of sorts, legal sorts. But when agencies are trying to auction off the same bloody type of property, built in the same subdivision from 5, 10, 15, 20 years ago, on the same day, from the same builder, blah, blah. I mean, you got to really ask yourself the question: am I getting the best value? Is this the best strategy? I'm not saying it's not. It should be one of the many strategies that you could opt to use depending on your circumstance. All these things. But the mainstream picked it up around 2015 or so, 2014, 2015, and then just ran with it, and we've had to live the shit ever since.
Yeah, and it's just worth highlighting that the clearance numbers, which are down, it really is only Sydney and Melbourne, right? The other markets, very small numbers, despite the fact that it gets a lot of coverage in the media. So again, that's a lot of twisting and turning on very, very little data. And talking of twisting and turning, let's just look at the rentals. So Sydney rentals on the 13th, 9,290. A week later, 9,581. So a bit of an uplift. In Melbourne, 10,131 on the 13th, and 10,136 on the 20th. So hardly any change there. And once again, I'm seeing a lot of pressure with regards to the rental sector, and I'm still seeing rental increases being spoken about. And of course, with interest rates rising, more property investors are actually underwater from a net investment perspective. And so they're trying to claw back some of that by putting up rents. I'm afraid that we're going to see that spiral going higher as well at the moment. So it is a tricky time in the rental sector, but still the absolute number of people, of properties in the rental sector is still very low.
Look, 100%, it's very, very low. And again, what's playing out in Melbourne is rather interesting, and it's going to, you know, many are going to write books about it in years to come. Maybe you could write a book about it, Martin, as to, you know, what happens when there's government influence, when there's state government influence over the market. I didn't put up on our notes one of the stories that I thought was very pertinent, and it was of what's happening in Melbourne with relation to the way that arrears, non-payment of rent, is being litigated, and how the tenants are now using the system that's been created by the state government there to basically opt into a position where the VCAT is absolutely chockers with matters, and they've got a free pass for not only weeks but for months. And New South Wales, without all this extra legislation, without all these extra policies that that've been thrown around in Victoria, New South Wales, Dusty, from her reports, she tells me that New South Wales, when you're going into a formal hearing, because there's the initial hearing where you try to mediate the terms, you try to resolve the matter. But if the matter cannot be resolved, then he goes into a formal hearing, and then people get time. I mean, they're blowing out 3-4 months now, Martin. 3-4 months before you start getting formal hearing on eviction notices and on rental arrears, and by the time you get to the actual hearing, and then it'll be another 4 to 6 weeks before they can be turfed out, be evicted. And if you can't evict them formally, then you've got to get a sheriff's notice and that. And in the meantime, the investors are footing the bill. Then not only that, but there's also issues with vagrancy and people just doing all sorts of stupid things to properties because they don't get it their way. And insurance companies aren't covering it. So yeah, look, it's really put the investors, with the back against the wall. And again, the $64 million question is, okay, so you're going to put your hand on the investors, or you're going to put your thumb on the investors not to go out and invest and promote building and construction so that we can have more supply. But on the other hand, you're not going to build yourself, or you're not going to provide public housing. So which one do you have? And to me, Melbourne is the petri dish of what we could potentially have post the May budget.
Absolutely, I'm afraid that I agree with you, and unfortunately, you can see the consequences of that with high debt, more property investors trying to get out while they can. And rentals, of course, still under pressure too. So we'll keep an eye on that as we go ahead. Now, as we come to the end of the show, a little tip. Well, a good word sometimes pays dividends.
Yeah, well, I was so after going to the supplier this morning. After that, I was a bit shitty with the extra charges, organized the order and moved on. And the next port of call was the paint supplier. So I went to the paint supplier and I said, you know what, I'm going to change my attitude here. So I put a smile on my face. I walked up to the counter and I politely complimented the young man behind the counter. I got an extra 10% discount, Martin. So
Excellent.
I usually I use my my nephew's a professional painter. My niece's husband, he's also my nephew, is a professional painter, and I use his account to buy my paints for our for our trades, and I couldn't. I lost his account number, and the guy behind the counter said, "Oh, don't worry, he's on a disband, a 22% discount band." I said, "Oh, I'm going to give you the 30% discount." Great. I said, "Can I get more? Can I get some other extras?" He said, "Yeah, might as well load up." So we did. So we I got extra supplies for the boys.
Yeah, and I think the moral of the story is it pays to be nice, right? So sometimes if you are actually nice and approachable and dealing with the people behind the counter in a positive way, you can sometimes get good benefit. In the current environment, I think that's a really good tip, Edwin. And we've come to the end of the show. Thank you very much for putting all the slides together as always. And well, we'll do it all again next week. There's so much going to come down the pipes. So we'll be interesting to see where we get to this time next week, Edwin. See ya.
Looking forward to it, man. You take care.
Take care.
Ciao.
Bye-bye.